The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Time for Capital Thinking, where we analyze the key policy, political, legal, and business issues that will shape America's future. Live from Washington, D.C., this is your unfiltered tour of the halls of power. Now, here's your host, Kevin O'Neill.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. It's a beautiful, sunny last day of July here in Washington, D.C., a typical, not humid day. We're going to spend a very interesting hour working through some international issues with you today here on Capital Thinking. We're going to talk about one of the more unique programs that brings folks to the United States and builds ties between the United States and a foreign government. Joining us for our first segment, Taryn Frederis. Taryn is a star associate here in the Squire Patton Boggs, Washington, D.C. office. Her practice focuses on international business and public policy. She represents a number of foreign sovereign governments here in the United States, helping them present their viewpoints on issues from trade policy, foreign investment, and treaties. Taryn's going to talk to us a little bit today about what's called the HOPE Fellowship Program. This is a USAID-sponsored leadership development program. It's aimed at female leaders from the Republic of Kosovo. So, Taryn, welcome back to the show. And I know we're going to talk a little bit later in the hour with a couple of the HOPE Fellowship Program participants, two fellows, even though they're both women, they're called fellows. But tell me first a little bit about the HOPE Program itself.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks so much for having me, Kevin. So the HOPE Fellowship Program, as you mentioned, is a USAID-funded program, and it was established in 2001 by the USAID and the National Albanian American Council, which is seated here in Washington. And it actually started as a regional program for the Balkans as a region following the breakup of Yugoslavia. But since in the last several years, it has shifted and is focused primarily now on the Republic of Kosovo, which is a small country in southeastern Europe, about 1.8 million people. And as you and many listeners probably know, went through a brutal war in the late 1990s that ended in 1999. And following the war, started at ground zero and had to build a lot of capacity, declared independence in 2008, and so has only been an independent country for about, 6 years. And it has been extremely important to the country for women to be involved in the process of building the government's capacity. And USAID and the U.S. government, as well as the government of Kosovo, recognized the importance of that early on and supported this program by which the National Albanian American Council, with the support of USAID, identifies young women in Kosovo that are the requirements are that they are between the ages of 25 and 45, they have a college degree, speak fluent English, and they have to actually currently be in a managerial position in their jobs, which is actually something that I think is really important. This program actually supports women that have already taken their own initiative and that have already developed and shown their own leadership capabilities. They apply to be a part of this program that provides them with leadership training in their own country first, and then several of them get to come to Washington for a month to pursue a program that they've identified, a project that they've identified that will bring some level of change and improvement to their local communities. And it could be in a variety of different sectors. And then they come to Washington and they meet with people that they think might be able to assist them with that project. They get to learn about Congress and the administration and, you know, various different NGOs and others here in Washington. And then they have the opportunity to be seated in an NGO or a business or an agency here in Washington for a couple of weeks. And we've actually here at Squire Patton Boggs hosted, this is our third group of fellows that we've hosted, and we have helped them to work on their project, helped connect them with people in town that might be able to support them as they pursue the implementation of their project. So it's really a great program, and really excited that we're able to be a part of it.
Great. Well, so you talked a little bit about this in your first answer here, but why don't you give us a little more depth on how many fellows have actually participated in the program and maybe a little more about what they do and don't do while they're in Washington.
Yeah, so actually there's been almost 1,500 fellows that have been a part of the program since it began in 2001. And as I indicated, originally it was focused regionally as there, you know, were many countries coming out of the breakup of Yugoslavia that, you know, were building capacity, but has since focused on Kosovo. And there have been 200 women from Kosovo actually that have been able to participate in the entirety of the program and come to Washington to pursue these projects. And so, as I mentioned, they, when they apply for this program, they have to identify a project in their field that they actually have the capacity to implement. It can't be some high pie in the sky kind of project. It has to be something that they have the capacity to implement, something that would be beneficial not only to them and their agencies or their organizations, but also to their communities. And when they're here, they are actually supported by an executive training coach that supports them as they develop their projects. And they then have to, by the time their time in Washington is over, they have to report back and present their projects. And then when they return to Kosovo, they're expected to implement the projects. And currently, I know from my discussions with the National Albanian American Council that they're also hoping to, since there have been now 200 women that have participated in this program and implemented important projects back in their country, the National Albanian American Council and USAID are now working on trying to develop a mechanism whereby these women can continue to work together and support each other as they continue on with their projects back in Kosovo.
Interesting. Okay. Well, so why don't you tell us about the impact the program's had to date here in Washington or back home?
Yeah. I mean, so actually, it's interesting. Obviously, you know, the focus of the program, I think, is to impact the country and to support these women as they continue to pursue career goals and advance their country. But as you mentioned, there are also certainly, I think, impacts here in Washington. So, for example, the women will all be placed in a member of Congress's office for a day up on the Hill. And oftentimes, obviously, Kosovo is a very small country, and it's unfortunately most well known for the war by a lot of people here in Washington. And by placing these women in congressional offices or even some of the NGOs that they're placed in or other places, they've really been able to give, I think, members of Congress and others an opportunity to learn more about Kosovo and learn about the country beyond war. It's certainly, I mean, it's been 15 years since the war, so it's, the country has, you know, moved on and is developing. It's declared independence, and I think they're able to provide people that don't know much about how the country has changed with a new perspective. And I think that that's really important. I think they certainly are able to teach us as much as they're learning. And but back when they do get home to Kosovo, it's actually been you know, I think both Leah and Alira, who have joined me today, will talk a little bit more about their specific projects and some of the change that they've seen. But I think the statistics even speak for themselves. Currently, Hope Fellow alumni encompass 6 members of parliament, 1 mayor, an advisor to the president of Kosovo, who is actually a woman, I should mention, and 1 advisor for the prime minister of Kosovo. So these women have proven that, you know, they really do have the leadership capabilities to participate at the highest levels of the Kosovo government.
Interesting. Well, Taryn, real quickly, how did you get involved in this program?
Yeah, so Squire Patton Boggs has actually represented the government of Kosovo for the last few years. And through I've been involved in that representation, and through that representation, we came to know about the National Albanian American Council and the importance of this great program. And as I mentioned previously, this is the 3rd group of Hope Fellows that I have hosted here at the firm, with the support of the firm and several of our colleagues who have met with the fellows and provided them insight into how lobbying works in Washington, how Congress works, how the administration works, all things that they oftentimes is an element of their projects. Many of these projects are intended to change certain policy in their countries, and so they've all been, you know, very interested to learn about how lobbying and public policy works in Washington. And we have we've had the privilege of working with, like I said, three of these groups. And actually, last year I spoke at their graduation, and it's been a real honor, like I said, to continue to host them and learn more. I actually am able, I think, to represent their government even more effectively, learning about their backgrounds and the work that they're doing in their country. So it's been a real pleasure.
Very good. Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk to a couple of the Hope Fellows themselves about their experience here in Washington and what's going on in their home country. You're listening to Capital Thinking here on the Voice America Business Network.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hey, out of my way!
Welcome to Washington Gridlock. Patton Boggs' legal team can make sense of it all. We know how Washington works. We've been sorting it out for over 50 years. We have what it takes. Straight, unfiltered, Patton Boggs. We deliver the insights you need to stay on top of your game.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hear ye, hear ye. The House will come to order.
Having trouble sorting out what's going on Capitol Hill? Patton Boggs can cut through it all. We've got the insight, the know-how, the connections to navigate. Patton Boggs. Straight, unfiltered. Patton Boggs. A bipartisan voice with knowledge and over 50 years of experience.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
If you find yourself under the Klieg lights of a government investigation, you want experience on your side. Patton Boggs has over 50 years of it. We've handled some of the biggest white-collar crime cases. Put that experience to work for you.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
The same firm that's been navigating the government maze for more than 5 decades is also the same firm that can help you protect your most important assets. Whether it's a valuable patent, an important copyright, or your next big idea, Patton Boggs is committed to protecting your intellectual property.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Live from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, welcome back. We're talking a little bit about the Unique Hope Fellowship Program, and having talked to one of my colleagues who's been involved with the program for a few years, we're now going to turn our attention to visiting with a couple of the Hope Fellows themselves, two dynamic women who are joining us, Leah and Alira. Leah works in the Ministry of Trade and Industry, where she's a Senior Investment Promotion Officer at the Investment Promotion Agency of Kosovo. There she works on facilitating investment decisions, helping businesses establish contacts and get contracts in the countries, and she also advises public authorities on how to attract investment to Kosovo. Now that she's a fellow here, Leah is hoping to learn a little bit more about how to promote the communications and technology sector in Kosovo here in the United States. Joining her is Alira, who's the Acting Director General of the Office of the Auditor General in Kosovo. There she has got some reporting and accounting responsibilities, overseas internal financial controls, and helps promote good governance. She's been a technician accountant in Kosovo for the Society of Certified Accountants and Auditors. That's an interest of mine. And here in the Hope Fellowship Program, Alira is hoping to gain some more practical knowledge about international auditing standards in the globalized economy of today. So ladies, welcome to the show, your debut here on Capital Thinking. And let's start with Alira. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself, what led you to apply for the fellowship program?
Hi, Kevin. Firstly, thank you for having me here. And I want to say that, yes, outside is really a beautiful weather. So I'm Alira, and I'm working for the National Audit Office of Kosovo. This is like a sister organization with the government accountability of USA here in your country. My main responsibility is to lead and manage one of our big four big divisions. So I'm mainly leading the corporate services. My role there is to secure that the public financial controls are properly established. So in this way, I secure that we are being a role model for other institutions in our country. The mission of the office is to contribute to sound financial management in public administration. This we do by performing quality audits in line with internationally recognized public sector auditing standards. By doing this, we try to build confidence on spending of public funds. We try to be a trustworthy source of information, and we try to play an active role in securing taxpayers and other stakeholders' interests in enhancing public accountability. Over the years, I mean, we see many changes in all the sectors, but I mean, especially, I mean, economically, I think all the countries around the world has faced many changes, and especially after the crisis. So in order to understand better these changes, then I requested to become part of Washington, D.C. leadership program. And this would help me, but not limited only to me, also my organization, to conduct the research study. So I will be able to make comparisons, and to in this way, I will try to add value to Kosovo public sector audit. nonetheless, this hope, the mantra of Hope Fellowship Program is giving back. So what I'm looking forward is I'm trying to share my knowledge gained by my peers here in your country, and I'm trying to become a more handsome person. I think this is very important for all the people. I mean, we have to become more handsome and to try to share the knowledge to the others. Thank you. I will pass now.
Very good. Let me ask Leah to tell us a little bit more about herself and why she decided to get involved with the fellowship program.
Hello, Kevin. Thank you for offering us, the Hope Fellows, this opportunity to speak about this fantastic fellowship opportunity that we have here. So I work for the government of Kosovo. It's the youngest country in Europe and has the youngest population also in Europe. So as even Taryn talked about it, we are continuing to build our institutions and strengthening our society, rebuilding our economy, which was completely destroyed during the war, which ended in 99. And this remains the backbone of our efforts to ensure that Kosovo becomes a prosperous state. So now I'm a part of this mission. I work in attracting foreign investors whose businesses can thrive, because in Kosovo we offer very favorable policies and an attractive young and educated labor force. So the Hope Fellowship, why I applied, it's because Hope Fellowship has been an opportunity for me to kind of step back from my daily dynamic routine back at home. And has served me, given me an opportunity now to assess what my team back in the agency and I have accomplished so far by meeting these exceptionally talented and accomplished people in Washington, D.C., and we got to share our insights of our work in Kosovo, and it just give us a chance to capturing their know-how. So in particularly, getting accepted as a Hope Fellowship, as a Hope Fellow, was an achievement for me itself. But primarily, initiatives has been one particular opportunity that Hope Fellowship is giving us, which is access to senior and influential members of the government who are engaged in issues and areas of our interest, and particularly on the area of the world where we come from, and international leaders and in practice areas which each of the individuals in Hope Fellowship that we focus on, because we all out of 8 fellows, we all come from different sectors and different backgrounds from back home.
Well, Alira, let me come back to you. You mentioned some research that you're doing. Why don't you tell us go into a little more depth about what each of your respective projects are that you're working on in D.C. and how you hope to pursue your research goals, what the outcomes of that research might do for you back home?
Yes. As you mentioned also when you made the introduction, the main research is to look on internationally auditing standards in a globalized economy. My project concept idea has to do with the improvement of quality review process back home when it comes to the financial audits. My work has to do with the learning on the way how facts and analysis are checked for accuracy. So when we prepare our recommendation, we have a real facts behind each of recommendation and each finding that we have found during the process. This work, then I believe, will lead on further improvement of the operations within our office. But besides this, the aim is to further develop the quality of our audit reports. By having a better quality in audit reports, the Parliament will be able to have more concise, more concrete, more readable and relevant reports and recommendations. So when they look for accountability from the managers of each budget spender in the government of Kosovo, then the recommendation will help them and in addressing them, and they will contribute to the development of good governance of the country. At the same time, I might seek ways for further cooperation and exchange of information And this I'm thinking to do by learning more from each other as countries in different forms, because as I said, we are like sister organizations, and I think it's just that we are far away, but still we have very, very similar approach and very similar goal towards the countries. So making the taxpayers' money spent effectively and efficiently.
Very good. Leah, do you want to answer as well?
Yes, of course. So I previously mentioned that I work for the Foreign Investment Agency, and one of the five targeted sectors which have high priority from the Republic of Kosovo is the information and communications technology. So these sectors are also currently even being used as priority sectors for promotion in our agency, which is the Kosovo Investment and Enterprise Support Agency. And the ICT sector back in Kosovo is seen with a high potential to develop, which is one of the sectors which is the most attractive for foreign direct investment. So since the ICT sector is considered a very vibrant sector with a potential for increasing youth employment, innovation, and also for potential export expansion, I am trying to focus on this sector specifically for my project. And why I chose also the ICT sector is because currently the government does not have any programs supporting directly this sector. So now the aim, my goal for the project is to try to create this network of all qualifying labor force which are currently employed in the ICT sector in Kosovo. So not only people who are employed in companies, but even trying to identify freelancers, which is something that is more challenging about my project. And so the aim of creating this network is to try to identify what is our niche. So what specifically are we good at in ICT sector, and then try to use all this information as tools for our agency to promote Kosovo as a destination for investment in Europe for ICT sector. So now it's been more than 10 days that I've arrived in Washington, D.C. I had a lot of meetings with different organizations, institutions, people who are generally working on promotion, lobbying, campaigning, and I had a lot of trainings as well during these 10 days. But it's only been halfway. I'm still in the process of identifying more people and organizations with whom I could potentially meet and learn from their work, and then try to get the best of their experiences and implement it in my project. So the idea is that during my time here, I will be able to identify ways on how to bring together this group of professionals and get them to work together with our agency, which is a government agency, and together work on promoting the sector. And but now I see that while we're here in D.C. and meeting a lot of people, we start to get new ideas about our project, and I'm just starting to add these different elements in my project now that would further develop it. So not only by creating this database, now I'm trying to focus even on identifying all the institutions who offer trainings on ICT sector, and then trying to figure out what skills are needed. So trying to identify what the U.S. market actually seeks, what skills are they're seeking, and then try to do matchmaking of skills once I'm back in Kosovo.
Very good. Well, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll come back and chat a little more with the Hope Fellows here on Capital Thinking.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hey, out of my way!
Welcome to Washington Gridlock. Patton Boggs' legal team can make sense of it all. We know how Washington works. We've been sorting it out for over 50 years. We have what it takes. Straight, unfiltered, Patton Boggs. We deliver the insights you need to stay on top of your game.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hear ye, hear ye. The House will come to order.
Having trouble sorting out what's going on Capitol Hill? Patton Boggs can cut through it all. We've got the insight, the know-how, the connections to navigate. Patton Boggs. Straight, unfiltered. Patton Boggs. A bipartisan voice with knowledge and over 50 years of experience.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
If you find yourself under the Klieg lights of a government investigation, you want experience on your side. Patton Boggs has over 50 years of it. We've handled some of the biggest white-collar crime cases. Put that experience to work for you.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
The same firm that's been navigating the government maze for more than five decades is also the same firm that can help you protect your most important assets. Whether it's a valuable patent, an important copyright, or your next big idea, Patton Boggs is committed to protecting your intellectual property.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
From Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, welcome back. We are talking about the Hope Fellowship Program, which brings dynamic young leaders from the Republic of Kosovo here to the United States to interact with government and business officials. We have with us Leia and Alira. We were chatting with them before the break. We'll pick things up where we were. And ladies, we're talking a little bit about your research projects before. Let me turn the tables and ask you now to talk about what you think you bring back home, what impact this program has on the folks who get to come to D.C., the United States, and have this experience. And we'll start with Leia this time around.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. So basically, what I would bring home is not only a personal development for me during the time that I've spent here in D.C. and all the experience that I got, but it will actually help my agency where I work, because I'm aiming that after I implement this project successfully in the ICT sector, which is currently in Kosovo a very small sector, but I'm trying then to implement similar projects, because the approach is basically very similar. It's on how to promote and how to bring together people and scale up the potential of sectors and then implement it on the rest of the five other targeted high potential sectors that we promote. But as a Hope Fellow, the impact in the country, I must say it is more of has a two-folded impact. It's on the one hand, it really helps us as individually. It gives a voice and courage to many ambitious, talented women who were part of Hope Fellowship and who are now part of a largely male-dominated society back home. And on the other hand, it creates this network of women leaders who are currently engaged in government, private sector, civil society. And it's not only by advancing the women position in our society, but with the impact of Hope Fellows, it's because it contributes towards Kosovo economic revival and just developing a democratic society.
Good. Let me ask Alira to chime in on the same question.
It is said that change comes from you. And this woman, by participating in all these trainings, and if we review the statistics, and then by discussing with people that has really influenced, and by seeing good practices around here, I think this woman were able to benefit and do some changes in their community. Well, again, starting from their own. As we said, there were more than 200 women that has participated in this program, in Washington Leadership Program. And all of them came in groups, and all of them had their own project idea. Besides their own project ideas, as I said, they came in groups. They were they had to have also a group project, and they had to implement this group project. So I believe that with this group projects, at least they were able to make some changes in the society of our country.
All right. Well, I understand that when you're here, the fellows not only do things individually, but that you work collectively on a group project. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, that is true. So, but this project idea, we have to develop it while we're here. So we don't come initially as a group with a group project idea. We get to think about it during the first week and come up with a project that each one agrees and that has something to offer. And the project has to have an impact on the society. So I can talk about our group project. We have already identified it. Our project is about raising awareness for Down syndrome people in Kosovo. I'll tell you more specifically, there is a Down syndrome society in Kosovo, which is usually members are parents' society of children with Down syndrome, and they have been trying to raise awareness, but also include them into social enterprises. And so far, they have opened this coffee shop in the capital of Kosovo, in Pristina, and they engaged their children with Down syndrome on working on this coffee shop. And as well, they are also producing this handmade postcards. So we chose this project because of group of eight. A lot of us, we've never heard about this cafe in Pristina, and we were really surprised. So that we identified that there's a lack of marketing and promotion and telling people that there is this coffee shop and how we can integrate people with Down syndrome into doing internships in businesses or even working in coffee shops or just being integrated more in the society. So our plan is that when we go back, we're eight ladies who work and have different backgrounds. We have people that work in marketing agencies, and we're trying to go back and just so not develop a new project, but just promote the current projects that the Down Syndrome Society already has. So by starting first to contact all the fellow alums, since we're 200 women, we're trying to organize these meetings that are going to be held at this coffee shop monthly, and this way we promote it and use a lot of social media, as well as each of us, we work on this big corporates or even governmental institutions, so we're trying to promote even the selling of these handmade cards in our workplace. So this is our group project.
Very good. Well, Taryn, let me bring you back into the conversation. I know Squire Patton Boggs has represented the Republic of Kosovo. Tell us a little bit about your experience and what the government's trying to accomplish here in their work in Washington.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. So as I mentioned, I think earlier on in the show, we've worked with the government of Kosovo for the last few years, and the government is really, and the country itself, has really undergone a lot of change over the last several years. As I mentioned, and as Alira and Leia mentioned, the war ended in 1999, but after the war, the country faced a lot of challenges, and so it's only been, it declared independence in 2008 and has only been independent for about 6 years, and throughout that process it's had to develop brand new institutions and has really developed very quickly. It's currently recognized by more than 109 countries around the world, which is more than half of the UN, 23 of 28 European Union member states, and obviously the United States, you know, recognizes Kosovo and did so the day it declared independence. And it, since then, in 2012, the country, after the war, was initially governed by the UN, and it was called supervised independence. So supervised independence actually ended in 2012. And so for the last 2 years, the government has been operating without UN support. However, there is currently a European Union rule of law mission, which includes a police force and a justice mission operating in Kosovo to continue to help support stability and rule of law. And there's still, although right after the war in 1999, there were about 50,000 NATO troops that came into Kosovo. Now there are about 5,000. There are actually several U.S. Troops rotating in and out. They're effectively a peacekeeping force. There hasn't been conflict in Kosovo for some time, but the force continues to be there to help maintain that stability. So, like I said, it's really been a pretty, you know, vast change when you think about, you know, the trajectory of the country and where it's come from. And Squire Patton Boggs has really been there to continue to support the country, particularly in its bilateral relationship with the United States, to try to enhance that relationship. The two countries have a very strong relationship, but Kosovo, in light of its history, has a very unique situation needs support and in certain areas. And we work with the administration and Congress in support of the government. We also work to help promote continued economic development in the country and further international integration of the country. The country is in the process of pursuing membership in international organizations, and it's been very interesting for me. I mean, to watch and to support them in their efforts to gain bilateral recognitions from countries around the world. It's a quite a complicated process, as you can imagine. And oftentimes countries project their own domestic issues upon the government of Kosovo when determining whether or not to recognize them. And so it's been a very interesting process, I think, for our firm, but it's been really rewarding in working with the government and supporting them throughout this process and seeing a lot of development. They just in 2013 signed a historic agreement with the government of Serbia on normalizing relations. Serbia does not yet recognize the government of Kosovo or the country of Kosovo as an independent country. It perceives that it is still part of Serbia, but this historic agreement that was signed with the support of the U.S. and the EU begins the process of normalizing relationships between the two countries. And then just this year, actually, they just concluded their negotiations with the European Union on a stabilization and association agreement, which is a big landmark that they have, historic one that they've achieved as they continue to pursue integration and membership in the European Union, as well as eventual membership in the NATO Partnership for Peace program. So
Karen, we're gonna have to leave things there. We're gonna cut to commercial. We'll be back with more Capital Thinking right after this.
Great, thank you.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Interrogatories.
Prima facie.
Pleadings.
Motion for summary judgment.
E-discovery.
Affirmative defense.
Stipulations.
Ex parte.
Amicus brief.
Subpoena.
Litigation is confusing. Trust the litigation team at Patton Boggs to make sense of it all.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
From K Street to Wall Street to LaSalle Street, the Patton Boggs team knows how to pull off big business transactions. Come hear what we know. Patton Boggs covers the world.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. From Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
All right, well, we're back, and we're joined by Steve McHale, a partner out of the Squire Patton Boggs Washington, D.C. office, somebody who has worked at various agencies inside what is now the Department of Homeland Security, and he's here to chat with us a little bit about what's called CFIUS, that's the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, one of those things you may not hear an awful lot about, but which has a big impact on our national security and on our business that we conduct with foreign entities. So, Steve, welcome back to the show, and we bring you on because there's a recent case called Rawls versus CFIUS that we've had a judicial decision come out that really changes some of the landscape for how decisions are made about where foreign investments can take place in the United States. So start at the beginning and tell us a little bit about this case.
Sure, Kevin. Thanks a lot for having me back. Well, first, a little bit on CFIUS. It's a large committee, interagency committee of about 14 or 15 different government agencies. And its job is to review transactions in which a U.S. Foreign investor is buying or acquiring a U.S. business and determine if that will adversely affect national security or critical infrastructure. In this case, Rawls Corporation is a Delaware corporation, but it's owned by two Chinese nationals who are senior executives of a very large Chinese corporation called the Sany Corporation, which basically makes equipment. Rawls set out to buy four pieces of property for wind farm development in Oregon. Bought basically the assets of other U.S. businesses that were preparing to do the same thing. Those wind farms turned out to be very near a test range for the U.S. Navy, where it was testing UAVs or drones. When Rawls went to CFIUS to say, you know, is there any issue here, CFIUS came back and said, yes, there is. And quite remarkably ordered them not only not to build the wind farms, but to actually remove all of the foundations that had already been laid for some of the towers, and to get CFIUS's clearance before they sold the property. Obviously, that wasn't acceptable to Rawls. CFIUS referred the whole matter to the president, who has the final decision, and President Obama affirmed that decision in 2012 and essentially ordered the same, that Rawls take the same actions. Unusually, then, Rawls went to court and went to the Federal District Court here in Washington to get that decision overturned. And I say unusually because these are national security decisions, and national security decisions of the president in particular are generally not reviewable in court. And in fact, the statute that established CFIUS says that there should be no judicial review of final decisions by the president in this kind of situation. So the district court, not surprisingly, dismissed Rawls's case, and Rawls then took that to the Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, Federal Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, and surprisingly to everybody who follows this area, last week, the D.C. Court of Appeals reversed the district court, voided the decisions, and sent it back with instructions to the district court to conduct further proceedings. The Court of Appeals acknowledged that it cannot review the president's final decision as to whether a particular set of facts constitutes a threat to national security. But what they did find is that they can review the process by which that decision is reached, and in particular, they can review when Rawls was essentially deprived of its property rights, whether it received due process under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. So that's really a first that a Court of Appeals has actually reversed, or at least vacated, a presidential decision arising from CFIUS.
So maybe go into a little bit about, you're getting there at the end, but what's the real significance from a policy and legal perspective of this decision?
Well, there's two things. The court essentially said that due process applies to these kinds of reviews. It said that the parties are entitled to notice about what CFIUS is going to order, have an opportunity to review the unclassified evidence that's part of the CFIUS file, and to respond to that evidence and CFIUS's proposals. Up until now, CFIUS is a very secretive organization, and it's basically almost a one-sided conversation in many instances. The parties who want to go to CFIUS to get, you know, voluntarily to get their views, or have been summoned in before CFIUS, basically file a very lengthy application answering a large number of questions that are set out in the regulations. They then respond to any requests for further information or documentation from CFIUS. But the discussions with CFIUS, if there are any, tend to be fairly limited, and then CFIUS issues its decision. Its decisions never tell you why they made the decision. It just tells you either that the transaction has been cleared or that these actions will have to be taken before the transaction can be cleared, or the transaction is going to be prohibited entirely. And often you have no real understanding why it was CFIUS was concerned about the transaction at all, and you have no knowledge of what additional information besides what you yourselves presented affected it. So what's important here, then, Kevin, is that the parties now have a better opportunity to frame the debate in front of CFIUS to make sure that what CFIUS is looking at is accurate, and that there aren't some additional things that they might want to provide to CFIUS to argue for different kinds of measures and that sort of thing.
I see. Well, tell us a little bit about what this means for CFIUS's reviews going forward, for other entities that might go down the same path.
Right. Well, I think, one of the big things, as I was saying, is CFIUS is very secretive, and therefore it's gotten a reputation of not explaining itself, and sometimes its decisions are hard to understand. Particularly with respect to Chinese investors and some others, there are a lot of rumors about what it is that CFIUS is trying to do, and when you don't explain yourself, it tends to give rise to conspiracy theories and things like that. I think what this will do is it's a start down the road to making CFIUS a little bit more transparent and a bit more accountable for its actions, and that can only be a good thing. And it does empower the investors, the foreign investors and the U.S. Sellers a little bit more to be a bit more able to be more active in the process and perhaps to affect the outcome.
I see. Okay, well, so I'm a foreign investor looking for opportunities in the U.S. How does this open doors for me or close them in the future?
Well, it closes any. It doesn't, and I'm not sure whether it opens, but what it may do is give more confidence in the CFIUS process. If you have an investment that could potentially even remotely have some form of impact on national security or critical infrastructure, foreign investors, particularly from Asia and the Middle East, have been increasingly reluctant to make those kinds of investments in the U.S. because they were so uncertain about what CFIUS would do. By making it a little bit more transparent, and I'm hoping that this is perhaps the beginning of bigger changes in the CFIUS process to make them even more transparent, that should hopefully restore some confidence and give people a little bit more incentive to invest.
I see. Okay. And now this actual case is at the appellate level. Do you have reason to think it ends up in the Supreme Court next year?
Well, it certainly could. The government, it just came out last week, so the government hasn't said what it's going to do. I think it's probably likely that it will seek rehearing in the full court of appeals. That means this was decided by a 3-judge panel, and they can actually ask the full court, which I, Kevin, what has it got, like 13, 12 judges on that court? I'm not sure. But they can ask all those judges to review the decision and either affirm it or not. And then they could take it to the Supreme Court. You know, the United States government is fairly cautious about what kinds of cases it takes up there, and it's, I think, too early to say whether they would take this one forward. If nothing happens, it'll go back to district court, where the district court will oversee the process of CFIUS producing more information and some explanation of its decision and giving the parties, giving Rawls and the U.S. business sellers a little bit more opportunity to play in the process.
Steve, hit everyone with your email address.
It is Stephen with a PH, Stephen.McHale, McHale, at squirepb.com.
Very good. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's Capital Thinking. We hope everyone has a great weekend. We'll be back next Thursday with more at the intersection of law, policy, and business here on Capital Thinking.
Thank you for joining us for Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. We hope to have you join us again for more insight from Washington. We're here every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Business Network.